major catastrophe. With strong northerly winds, the groundburst of that 4-megaton bomb in Goldsboro would have deposited lethal fallout over Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, and New York City. And the timing would have been unfortunate. The new president of the United States, John F. Kennedy, had delivered his inaugural address only 3 days earlier, promising renewal and change, vowing to pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. The spirit of youthful optimism sweeping the United States would have been dimmed by the detonation of a hydrogen bomb in North Carolina and an evacuation of the nation's capital. The Goldsboro accident, far from being an isolated or improbable event, was a portent of the nuclear threats that the Kennedy administration would have to confront. Robert S. McNamara, the new Secretary of Defense, learned about the accident during his third day on the job. The story scared the hell out of him. McNamara knew remarkably little about nuclear weapons. The previous month, when Kennedy had asked him to head the Department of Defense, McNamara was the president of the Ford Motor Company. He was a young, supremely self-confident businessman devoted to systems analysis and efficiency. At the Harvard Business School, he'd taught accounting. Aside from a 3-year stint in the Army Air Forces, where he'd served in the Office of Statistical Control and helped General LeMay calculate optimal fuel use for the bombing of Japan, McNamara had no military experience, and he'd spent little time thinking about military strategy or procurement. Determined to shake things up at the Pentagon, McNamara found himself instead feeling profoundly shaken during his first week on the job. The B-52 crash in North Carolina wasn't the only accident that involved fully assembled sealed pit weapons, and McNamara soon learned about others. A B-47 carrying a Mark 39 bomb had caught fire while taking off at Dyess Air Force Base near Abilene, Texas. At an altitude of about 200 feet, the pilot realized the plane was on fire, banked to avoid a populated area, and ordered the crew to bail out. 3 of the 4 crew members got out in time. The plane entered a vertical dive, hit the ground, and vanished in a fireball. The high explosives of the hydrogen bomb detonated but didn't produce a nuclear yield. A few weeks later, a B-47 carrying a Mark 39 bomb caught fire on the runway at Chenault Air Force Base in Lake Charles, Louisiana. The crew escaped, and the weapon didn't explode. It melted into radioactive slag. In the skies above Hardinsburg, Kentucky, a B-52 carrying 2 hydrogen bombs collided with a tanker while attempting to refuel. The crew of the B-52 heard a crunching sound. All the lights went out, the cabin rapidly decompressed, and the plane began to disintegrate. 4 of the crew ejected safely. The other 4 were killed, as were all 4 members of the tanker's crew. The wreckage of the 2 planes covered an area of roughly 27 square miles. The hydrogen bombs were torn open by the crash. The nuclear cores of their primaries were discovered intact, resting on piles of broken high explosives. At an air defense site in Jackson Township, New Jersey, a helium tank ruptured near a Bomark missile, starting a fire. A pair of explosions soon followed inside the concrete shelter that housed the missile. 55 other Bomarks lay in similar shelters beneath corrugated steel roofs nearby. When emergency personnel arrived, the fire was out of control. They put fire hoses in the entrances to the burning shelter and fled the area. An Air Force security officer called the state police and mistakenly reported that a nuclear weapon had exploded at the site, spreading panic throughout central New Jersey and prompting civil defense authorities to go on full alert in New York City, 70 miles to the north. Fallout from the Bomark's 10-kiloton warhead, it was feared, could reach Trenton, the state capital, Princeton, Newark, and possibly Manhattan. Firefighters returned to the missile site about an hour and a half after the initial explosions and put out the fire. The warhead had fallen out of the nose cone. The high explosives had burned instead of detonating, and the nuclear core had melted onto the floor. The shelter contained most of the radioactivity, but water from the fire hoses had swept plutonium residue under the doors, down the street, and into a drainage ditch. The accidents in North Carolina and Texas worried Robert McNamara the most. In one crash, the failure of a single mechanical switch could have led to a full-scale thermonuclear explosion. In the other, the detonation of the Mark 39's high explosives was the sort of one-point safety test that you never want to conduct in the real world. The Mark 39 had passed the test, this time. It wasn't something that McNamara wanted to see repeated. The lapses in weapon safety seemed to be part of a much larger problem, a sense of disarray and mismanagement at the Pentagon, extending from the budget process to the planning for nuclear war. In his view, the Department of Defense had been saddled with the previous administration's intellectual bankruptcy in both strategic policy and in the force structure. McNamara was determined to bring order, rational management, and common sense to the workings of the Pentagon as quickly as possible. During the 1960 campaign, John F. Kennedy had repeatedly attacked President Eisenhower for allowing the Soviet Union to surpass the United States in military power. The Communists will have a dangerous lead in intercontinental missiles through 1963, the platform of the Democratic Party declared, and the Republican administration has no plans to catch up. Kennedy argued that Eisenhower's strategy of massive retaliation had left the United States in a helpless position, unable to prevent the Soviets from subverting and overthrowing governments friendly to the West. An over-reliance on nuclear weapons had made American promises to defend the free world seem hollow. "We have been driving ourselves into a corner where the only choice is all or nothing at all, world devastation or submission," Kennedy warned. General Maxwell Taylor's book, The Uncertain Trumpet, and its call for a nuclear strategy of flexible response had greatly impressed Kennedy. He agreed with Taylor's central thesis. In a crisis, the president should have a wide range of military options. Kennedy wanted the ability to fight limited wars, conventional wars, and a nuclear war with the Soviets that could be stopped short of mutual annihilation. Controlled response and controlled